There is an important dialogue in the acclaimed science fiction work, The Fifth Season, by N.K. Jemisin. People are trying to survive an apocalyptic environment where climate disaster has deconstructed the world. One line that resonates powerfully in this book ends like this: that we're not human is just the lie they tell themselves so they don't have to feel bad about how they treat us. This is Dr. Catherine Bancole Medina with The Invention of Racism. The goal of this podcast series is to share the subtle and not so subtle nuances of racism from the past into the 21st century. Understanding and speaking the truth about racism is the first step toward combating and ultimately eliminating it. In this episode, we will talk about another component of the seven pillars of the racist construct, humanity. Remember, there are seven components which help to explain how racism operates in the world. These seven pillars include dominance, management, containment, intellectuality, humanity, reality, and erasure. In the study of the history of racism, there is this great need for humans to decide the substance and human worth of other human beings. We could argue that the whole ideological reason accepted by racists is that devaluing other human beings is a necessary and powerful weapon for their own survival. This rightly assumes that racists have no interest in a just and equitable society. They are not concerned with caring for the whole of humanity. They are only interested in their small group. Racists have constructed complex ideas about certain members of humanity, ideas that always question the physical body, the mind, and the ethereal soul. They never ask the question, what makes us all human? They are absorbed by what differences can explain a presumed lack of humanity or human worth. You can say, they don't trust humanity, humanness, or the idea of human variety and diversity. In this episode, we will review the scientific knowledge and racial hierarchies of Samuel Morton, Samuel Cartwright, Josiah Nott, and Louise Agassiz, and how their ideas contributed to the destructive racialization of humanity. We will reference the pro-slavery movement in the United States during the decade before the Civil War, when the threat of abolitionists and later secession loomed, so much so that scientists and medical men came to the rescue of the slaveocracy. Science assisted in filling in any obvious gaps in the pro-slavery argument supporting the perpetual subjugation of African people. As a foundation, I have included physician and statesman Dr. Benjamin Rush of Philadelphia. Now, he was a Revolutionary War leader and abolitionist. Rush is inserted here because he preceded and influenced the basic scientific justifications of antebellum doctors like Morton, Cartwright, Nott, and Agassiz. Benjamin Rush endeavored to elicit sympathy towards African people. He believed that the skin color of blacks was a result of leprosy. In his thinking, the problem of Africans, the so-called race problem itself, could be solved if a cure could be found for the disease. On this idea, Rush noted, "We shall add greatly to their happiness, for however well they appear to be satisfied with their color, there are many proofs of their preferring that of the white people." In his assessment, not only were Africans considered physiologically diseased as a people, as evidenced by their skin color, they actually longed to be white. Rush had delineated the grand racial hierarchical scheme that whiteness was the standard. To advance these ideas, other scientists and medical doctors espousing their own brand of racial logos would create even more complex scales or build upon previous schemes. In the 1800s, Samuel Morton was a noted physician, naturalist, medical instructor, and ethnologist in Philadelphia. He sustained a long-held interest in the new field of ethnography, ethnographic science, specifically the study of human crania. Within this area of interest, he investigated the field of Aboriginal races. Morton began collecting and measuring human skulls, over 800, for the purpose of this study. In addition to the many people from around the world who donated crania to his collection, he spent a considerable amount of his personal funds as well. Morton published numerous works encompassing medicine, natural history, paleontology, and ethnography, including papers and medical essays, which among those volumes led to wide recognition for his crania studies. His crania studies featured a scheme for evaluating the race of African people. In his work, Crania Americana, Morton delineated five races of man, including subdivisions for African peoples. In Morton's scheme, the Caucasian race is characterized by a naturally fair skin. This race is distinguished for their facility with which it attains the highest intellectual endowments. Of Mongolians, he said that they were ingenious, initiative, and highly susceptible of cultivation. The Malays were described as active and ingenious and possessing all the habits of a migratory, predaceous, and maritime people. The Americans, and he's referencing here Native Americans, are adverse to cultivation and slow in acquiring knowledge, restless and revengeful and fond of war and wholly destitute of maritime adventure. The nearer Morton advanced toward black people on the scale, the less favorable were his description of them. And this is not to suggest that the aforementioned descriptions were favorable. The African defied the need to detail any type of collective attribute, however, other than, quote, the lowest grade of humanity, unquote. So low was his estimation that he further clarified his categorization of blacks. And then he goes on to talk about the term ancient Nubian. And he says it's used here synonymously with Meroite or Ethiopian without any reference to the Negro race. And then he goes on to say that he has designated the ancient Caucasians of Ethiopia as Austral Egyptians. And so Morton went out of his way to remove African people from other black groups who appear to have some record of human achievement that, in his mind, could only be explained by white admixture. In many ways, Samuel Cartwright took Morton's scheme and expounded upon it. Cartwright, a physician, ethnologist, and for a brief period, assistant surgeon general under Jefferson Davis, articulated the line that due to physiological differences, blacks were better suited to slavery than freedom. Some of you recognize Cartwright as the father of Negro diseases, which further supported the argument of biological, physiological difference. Cartwright asserted that blacks preferred to be slaves and that whites were being benevolent by serving as their slave masters. His argument suggested that if freed, Africans would be lazy and eventually become mentally ill. Cartwright added more dimension to his medical argument by bringing in the biblical justification for slavery, including the Hamitic myth. He assumed the argument that blacks were destined to be obedient to whites because they were presumed weak members of the human race, and because servitude was ordained supposedly by God. By suggesting that chains and militarism was only used to enslave equals, Cartwright even demeans Africanity further when he ignored the force with which Africans were taken from the continent and the ways in which they fought to be free. Medical doctors, perhaps not as vocal as Cartwright, performed various experiments attempting to settle the predetermined slave theory. The differences, of course, were always mental, to the extent that even abolitionists, and I'm speaking about white abolitionists, could not reconcile that whatever the course of slavery, that blacks would be perpetually mentally inferior to whites. Practitioner theorists like Cartwright offered pro-slavery arguments with seemingly one singular purpose: to confirm that people of African descent were not human, or were at least of a lesser human species. And the ideas advanced by physicians like Cartwright were widespread and largely well received by his white male peers. Antebellum physician and anthropologist Josiah Knott taught at the University of Louisiana and received his medical degree at the University of Pennsylvania. Like Morton, Knott provided a rationale for a superior white race as a part of fixed types of human beings. These scientific inquiries advanced a racial argument, which became the organizing principle around the formulation of whiteness in America. Knott wrote industriously on the races and with a self-congratulatory intensity on the issue of the primacy of white people to rule over all of humanity. Born in Switzerland, Louis Agassiz was a naturalist, researcher, and instructor who immigrated to the United States in 1846. Applying his medical, paleontology, and zoological skills, Agassiz studied non-whites ethnographically. He carefully observed Africans in America and in Brazil, and Native Americans, and articulated the belief that racial differentiation was an indication of the separate development of human species. But Agassiz was particularly fascinated and disturbed by the mixing of the races in Brazil, and concluded, and I'm quoting here, "Let anyone who doubts the evil of this mixture of races and is inclined from a mistaken philanthropy to break down all barriers between them, come to Brazil. He cannot deny the deterioration consequent upon an amalgamation of races, more widespread here than in any other country in the world, and which is rapidly effacing the best qualities of the white man, the Negro, and the Indian, leaving a mongrel, nondescript type deficient in physical and mental energy." End of quote. While Agassiz abhorred the political implications of being personally labeled a pro-slavery supporter, he did not hesitate when offering his observations on the zoological characteristics of races. He made simian comparisons to both Africans and Native Americans, and with specific reference to the colored races, Agassiz stated, "If, in our intercourse with them, we were guided by a full consciousness of the real difference existing between us and them, and a desire to foster those dispositions that are eminently marked in them rather than by treating them on terms of equality." So for Agassiz, race as a human scheme of classification seemed to be completely different from the issue of slavery. While he believed that the races could be afforded similar opportunities, they would only rise based on their race. Agassiz admitted the need to advance whiteness by asserting that difference must be delineated, and echoing the argument that whites were responsible for carrying out the activities which would determine racial difference. At the onset of the Civil War, Agassiz became a citizen of the United States. By the time of his death in 1873, he was a respected scientific scholar who had taught countless numbers of students. While Agassiz was not what we would call a fire-eating advocate of slavery, he operated in scholarly realms which served to validate the popular notions of Black inferiority using the scientific knowledge of the antebellum period. Samuel Cartwright, Josiah Nott, Louis Agassiz, and so many others offered a race science philosophy and supporting idea that there were distinct differences between whites and Blacks in terms of their humanity. The differences were obviously physiological in nature and were considered profound. Skin color, hair texture, in general, all discernible Africoid features were called into question. Yet there was also a psychological rationale for enslaving Black people, suggesting a natural state or mental desire on the part of Africans. And I do talk about how psychology was used in race, medicine, and slavery in my book, Slavery and Medicine. So to be sure, racists in the past relied on this pseudoscience, race-based pseudoscience, to advance their anti-African argument. Today's racists are heavily influenced by these works because they provide, though artificial, a provenance for their confirmation bias. Not only was the body of knowledge false and built entirely upon racial prejudice, in the upliftment of humanity, it has been incredibly harmful globally and across the generations. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Support for independent podcasts like The Invention of Racism is so critical at this moment. In the national and global effort to dismantle racism and to establish human equality, we need as many thoughtful and courageous voices as possible. If you believe in and appreciate this anti-racism podcast, continue to download and support us. I also encourage you to use your media platform to honestly analyze, examine, and put an end to racism. If you are listening to this podcast, then you already know. Discourse on racism is not for the faint of heart. I hope you will continue to join me as I present key topics in The Invention of Racism.